the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
Almost a year into its war in Gaza, Israel's economy is facing its steepest decline in years. Both military spending and government borrowing are skyrocketing. If the conflict broadens into other regions, can Israel afford a major war? To discuss this, I'm joined now by Greg Carlstorm, who's Middle East correspondent with The Economist. Greg, you're very welcome to the programme. First of all, 1 year into the escalation of this conflict and what happened last October, what kind of financial impact, firstly, in relation to Israel, is the conflict having on the economy?
It's an enormous impact on Israel. The central bank has put the expenditure over the past year at roughly $60 billion. About half of that is direct defense spending. But then there's also another $30 billion split amongst civilian costs, for example, the cost of relocating tens of thousands of people from the northern border and housing them for the past year. There are direct damages, buildings that have been destroyed, wildfires that have had to be put out, and then various other expenses. So and more than 10% of GDP in just 1 year.
That is a huge amount. How is Israel funding it? Is it increased borrowing, really?
It is. The deficit is more than 8% for this fiscal year. That is about three times higher than it was projected to be before October 7th. Debt levels are still, compared to a lot of other developed countries, they're still manageable. They're about 62% of GDP, but the trend is obviously increasing, and there's an expectation that it will cross 70% of GDP in the next fiscal year. And that's one of the reasons why we've seen both Moody's and S&P downgrade Israel's credit rating over the past year repeatedly.
I mean, they are very large sums, but equally, Israel does have a very vibrant economy. It may have had its credit rating downgraded by a couple of agencies, but it's still at investment grade. And as long as it has that financial support as well from the likes of the United States, they'll feel very confident, I would imagine, that they can deal with any cost.
And the financial support certainly makes a difference. On top of the $3 billion a year in annual military aid that the Americans provide, there was a one-off $14 billion package of aid, which was approved by Congress earlier this year. And so that takes care of close to half of those increased defense expenditures. But the broader economy, the concern that many people have in Israel right now, that many economists have, is that they're heading for a situation not unlike the one after the Yom Kippur War in 1973, where there was a prolonged period of both high inflation and stubbornly low growth. That vibrant Israeli economy may not be so vibrant in the years to come.
The costs, for example, we all see on the news when missiles get fired in different directions, and Israel has intercepted projectiles in the last year from Gaza, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Yemen and Iran. And there is a cost associated with the Iron Dome, that shield that they have. I read somewhere that it's between $50,000 and $2 million per projectile that they have to shoot down.
Right. And some of these projectiles, especially if you're talking about the very crude rockets that are used by Hamas or some of which are used by Hezbollah in Lebanon, these are things that cost only a few thousand dollars to produce, but they cost, as you say, tens of thousands of dollars to defend against. And that cost goes up significantly for the longer range, more advanced interceptors like the Arrow interceptors, which they used on Tuesday night to fend off that barrage of Iranian ballistic missiles. So yeah, there's a huge mismatch between what it costs an attacker and what it costs to defend against that attack.
And Greg, what about Iran and the economy in Iran? They export, I think it's about $1.8 million barrels of oil per day. There is a debate and discussion going on at the moment as whether that oil producing infrastructure could be a target from Israel. What kind of impact do you think this might have on their economy, and how financially and militarily equipped are they to engage in a longer, larger war?
There are two bits of infrastructure that I think would be of huge concern for them. One is, as you say, the oil exporting infrastructure, and what Iran is able to export, it's a fraction of what it would be able to export if it weren't under sanctions, if it had had better investment in its oil infrastructure over a period of years. And it does sell that oil at a discount compared to global market prices. But that is one of its only sources of hard currency still at this point, is oil exports. And so if those were to be cut off by strikes on its oil facilities, that would cut off Iran's main source of hard currency. But it would also probably have knock-on effects for the world economy. You've had groups both in Iran and other Iranian-backed groups across the region that have threatened to attack oil infrastructure in Saudi Arabia, UAE, other countries in the Gulf. And that's why when President Biden spoke the other night about the possibility of strikes on Iran's oil export facilities, the price of Brent crude jumped by about 5% in the hours after he was speaking. So
it's not surprising
for the Iranian.
Yeah, it's not surprising that the oil price jumped, but you would think it would have jumped by even more, given the sense of uncertainty and how this conflict could spread if it becomes a tit for tat around oil infrastructure.
And it's incredibly striking if you look at the price of Brent now compared to the price on October 6th, 2023. It's still $5 or $6 a barrel cheaper than it was before October 7th, before this regional war started. I think if you had told anyone a year ago that oil prices would be falling amid a regional war, they would have thought you were crazy. But part of that, I think, reflects what's macro trends with demand in the West and demand in China and concerns about China's economic growth. But I think part of it also reflects the work that countries like Saudi Arabia and the UAE have been doing to try and improve their relations with Iran over the past years and to try and stay out of this growing regional conflict, in part because they are worried about the possibility that their oil infrastructure could become a target.
And finally, Greg, when Israel made its move on Gaza and brought troops in, there were hundreds of thousands of reservists would have been called up from factories and businesses in the Israeli economy. Have they gone back to work as the Gaza operation has reduced a little bit in terms of physical military presence on the ground? And how has that affected the performance of the economy?
The labor market is incredibly tight right now because of the frequent call-ups. I mean, some of those reservists were able to go back to work after the first few months of the war when the number of Israeli troops in Gaza began to dwindle. But many of them have been called up for reserve duty once or twice more since then. And so they haven't been able to stay at work. They've gone back for a few months and then they've been called up for further duty. And that's putting a big strain on firms that are watching their workers constantly cycle in and out of the military. Now, on top of that, you have this growing ground invasion of Lebanon, and at least two divisions of reservists have been called up already. There's a possibility that more will be. So employment, unemployment is, it's 2.7%. It's an incredibly low figure, but partly that reflects the fact that there just aren't that many workers in the labor market at this point because so many people are being pulled in for repeated bouts of reserve duty.
Well, thank you very much for talking us through the economic costs and possible implications there. Greg Karlstrom, Middle East correspondent with The Economist. Thanks for joining us on the programme.